Welcome to this episode of the Biology of Trauma podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Amy. This episode will answer the following question. What two neuroscience features will reinforce chronic pain and make it habitual? In this episode, we are looking at how to unlearn pain, anxiety, and fatigue. I have brought in a distinguished guest, Dr. Howard Schuwiner, board certified in pediatrics, adolescent medicine, and internal medicine. Woof. He was also a professor at Wayne State University for 18 years, worked in Providence Hospital for 20 years, and is now a clinical professor in the Department of Internal Medicine at Michigan State University in Chicago. I first reached out to Dr. Schuwiner when I was a resident, preventive medicine resident, and I was finishing up my training, and I wanted to be trained in psychosomatic medicine. And this was something that I needed to create. I needed to seek this out. And Dr. Schuwiner was one of the ones that I sought out. He has been a leader and an expert in the field, and his publications on the topic have really led the field forward. And I was able to spend some time with Dr. Schuwiner and then other doctors in the psychosomatic space to really get a good understanding of this idea that the system is all connected, and what can happen in the mind can actually create physical symptoms. Dr. Schuwiner is a leader in the field and has been a fellow in the American College of Physicians, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the Society for Adolescent Medicine, and has really stepped into this leadership of this field of mind-body medicine. During his research, he noticed that sometimes people's pain went away, but they became more anxious or more depressed, or they became more fatigued, or they started having trouble sleeping. And all of a sudden, it made sense. It just was so obvious to him that it's because the whole system is connected. So we take away one thing and the body will compensate in another way. So it's really special for me to be able to welcome Dr. Schuwiner here and have him share with you his lessons learned. In this episode, you will learn about predictive processing and the brain's role in chronic pain, the role of emotional injuries and neural circuit pain in chronic conditions, how pain can actually become habitual and reinforced by fear and conditioned responses, why you should treat your brain like a child, and the principle of graded exposure. And finally, how internal family systems or parts work can be used to address fear and anger towards sensations and pain. I'm so very excited for this episode. Let's jump in. I would like for you to start with describing even what is a psychophysiologic symptom.
Okay. Let me, if you don't mind, I'm going to expand the question because I talk about this with every single person that I see, and I talk about how the brain works. What I say is you can't understand pain or fatigue or anxiety or depression or insomnia. You can't understand it unless you understand how the brain works. And the brain works by something we call predictive processing. Predictive processing means that our brains generate and create what we experience. It's a mind-blowing and revolutionary concept that is based, steeped in neuroscience, and these heavy, major, brilliant neuroscientists that have done tremendous amount of brain studies on this. And yet this field, this knowledge, these words are not part of medical training or psychological training or social work training. And what it means is that we don't see with our eyes. We don't see with our eyes. We see with our brain, which means that light comes in our eyes, but our brain generates the images that we see. How do we know that? Well, one simple way we know that is that you can see in your sleep when you dream. So you don't need your eyes to see, number one. And number two, the eyes commonly make mistakes in what they see, because predictive processing means that our brain is predicting what we're going to see or hear or feel moment by moment, because our brain has to work ahead of time to predict what we should do, because the brain needs to take shortcuts to survive. And this is something that's been evolutionary, determined for many, many, many years. And so we know with eyewitness reports, anyone who's in the legal system knows that eyewitness report. So, you know, you have a lineup. You are an eyewitness to a crime. Who was the criminal? Which one is it? Completely inaccurate, because what people see is in part based on what they expect to see, what their experience has been, who looks like a criminal, who would be a criminal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And 90% of the fibers that go to the visual cortex, where vision is generated, come from within the brain. Isn't that amazing? Only 10% of the fibers that go to our visual cortex come from our eyes. And the same thing is true with hearing. We hear what our brain expects us to hear. Our brain creates what we hear. If somebody gave you glasses that turn the world upside down, you'd see everything upside down, prism glasses for a day or two. And then your brain would make your vision right side up again. Your brain controls what you see. Our brains control what we hear. And most importantly, our brains control what we feel. In other words, when you touch a hot stove, it's not your finger causing pain. A finger cannot cause pain. It can send signals to the spinal cord, to all parts of the brain, but the experience of pain is generated by the brain. And it turns out that our brains decide if we're going to have pain or not. And how do we know that? Simply because there's tremendous documentation of people who have injuries and have no pain. So if you can have an injury and have no pain, what does that mean? Your brain is determining whether we have pain or not, moment by moment, second by second, all the time. Therefore, if our brain is determining if we have pain or not, why would it do that? And how would it decide whether we have pain or not? Well, that's where psychophysiologic symptoms come into play, because it turns out that an injury causes certain parts of the brain to activate to create pain, right? So when you get an injury, certain parts of the brain light up, and that creates the experience of pain in that area where you're injured. And if you get an emotional injury, a stress-related injury, things that cause stress and emotions, that causes the exact same parts of the brain to activate as does a physical injury. Are you following me? This is unbelievable. So a physical injury and an emotional injury cause the same things to happen in the brain. And the pain that can result, or fatigue or anxiety or depression or whatever this danger alarm signal that we have in our brain is activating, is causing, is the same. It can be just as, it's just as real. All pain is real. There's no such thing as imaginary pain or pain that's all in one's head, in a sense. It's all in our brain, because all pain is in our brain. All pain is generated by the brain. All these sensations are generated by the brain in response to some sorts of triggers, some sorts of danger or alarm mechanism, just like a smoke alarm works. So a psychophysiologic symptom is a symptom, a sensation that people have in their body that they feel that's real, that's caused by neural circuits in the brain in the absence of a physical injury. Then 90%, this is another shocking, I've spent 20 years learning all this stuff. Shocking thing is that roughly 90% of people with chronic pain and other chronic symptoms do not have a physical injury in the body to explain those sensations. And that is mind-blowing.
So say someone does have a physical injury, an accident, whatever. I mean, the list could be long. They've had a physical injury in their past 20 years ago, 30 years ago. How is it then that that physical injury is no longer explaining their current pain?
Yeah. So great question. So Number one, why I have three rules of medicine. Number one rule of medicine, all injuries heal. We were not been on this earth for 60,000 years to have injuries not heal. Injuries may heal in a funny way. You know, you can end up with a contraction, or you can end up with a limp. You can end up with all sorts of things due to an injury, but the injury will heal. Whether pain continues or not is up to the brain, because the brain learns pain through neural circuits and then it can remember pain, and then it can make pain be persistent. And I can explain to my best understanding why that would happen in situations. We can talk about that in a minute. But injuries do heal, number one. Number two, scars don't hurt. There's no nerve tissue in scars. So scars are not the cause of pain. Old injuries are not the cause of pain just due to the injury. Just one really interesting and amazing studies that came out recently, the last couple of years that I'm aware of, it related to scars. So if you take a woman who have a cesarean childbirth, they have a scar in their lower abdomen from the cesarean, the scar will heal. What percentage of women have pain in the scar after a cesarean childbirth? The answer is about 3 to 5%. It's pretty low, but there's some. What percentage of women have pain in the scar after the scar is healed after breast cancer surgery? And the answer is 30 to 50%. That's amazing. The difference, the scars are the same. It's not the scar that's different. The difference is in the difference in what it feels like to have a child versus to have breast cancer. Right? Huge difference. Anyway, so the third rule.
The meaning that was attached to that scar.
The meaning, exactly. The meaning of the beauty and wonder of having a child most of the time, and the fear and danger of having cancer. Huge difference. And then the third thing I would say, and this is a little controversial, but just while I'm on the topic of my three main medical rules, is that inflammation can cause pain. But the type of inflammation, in my view, that causes pain is what I would call macroinflammation. Macroinflammation means if you have an abscess, if you have a strep throat, if you have gout, if you have rheumatoid arthritis, if you have lupus, there's a lot of macro inflammatory conditions where you can see the inflammation. You know, catch my drift. But there's a lot of people in the world, and again, this is controversial, okay? I'm just giving my opinion, who believe that microinflammation causes pain, the kind of inflammation that we all have. The kind of inflammation that's in our arteries and in our gums and in our tissues. We all have some level of inflammation, depending on our exposure to pesticides and foods and the kind of foods my wife doesn't like me to eat, like pepperoni and sausage, stuff like that, okay? But that, in my view, is not a cause for chronic pain. We all have that. And people can have high levels of inflammatory markers, low levels of inflammatory markers and still have pain. People can recover from pain and still have high inflammatory markers. The pain goes away. And pain, neurocircuit pain, psychophysiologic disorders can turn on and off in a second. I saw a woman the other day, a young woman, it's an amazing story, who has horrible, horrible back pain. And we started doing our usual routine where we tried to help her be less worried about it and less concerned about it and be able to start moving and try to change the neural circuits in her brain. And it wasn't working at all. She was in this horrible, horrible, she could barely get out of bed. And she found a way to drag herself onto vacation away from home. And while she was on vacation, she emailed me and she said, I had this realization, my marriage is not working. I need an exit strategy. Amazing, powerful, and horrible, and whatever, a realization. And her pain completely turned off within seconds as soon as she recognized that. It's amazing. But the point is that neurocircuit pain, mind-body pain, psychophysiologic pain can turn on and off like that. Inflammation cannot turn on and off like that, okay? It's impossible. Inflammation comes over days, weeks, months, and lasts for days, weeks, years, and goes away. Inflammation, microinflammation, systemic inflammation, in my view, is not the cause of pain. So those are my three rules about injuries heal, scars don't hurt, and micro or systemic inflammation is not the cause of pain.
I'm going to go off my script now, and I'm going to start asking questions that I wasn't prepared to ask, but you've piqued my curiosity. So would you say, in your experience, that because of the neural circuits involved with pain, that all neural circuit pain has a message that has just not yet been brought to the conscious mind?
Well, I would say that pain that occurs in the absence of physical injury, or what I would call neural circuit pain, or mind-body pain, or other symptoms, as we discussed, are there for many possible reasons. And everyone is a little bit different. But one of the reasons is that it becomes habitual. And this may not have to do necessarily with a message or a marriage or, you know, stress or emotions or anything like that, although it certainly can be. But pain can be learned. And the brain learns pain just like it learns anything else, just like you learn how to ride a bike, how to play the violin, you know, how to do anything. And those neural circuits can become habitual and reinforced behaviorally over time by a combination of a variety of factors, one of which is fear and conditioned responses. So one of my favorite stories I tell is about a guy who was in the Vietnam War many years ago, who got an injury. He got shrapnel wound to his leg. He had a lot of pain. He got medevaced out in a helicopter. And his injury healed, because all injuries heal. His brain turned off the danger alarm signal. His pain was gone. He was pain-free. 20 years later, he was startled by the sound of a helicopter, and that caused pain to occur in his leg. His brain had connected a helicopter sound with the neural circuits for that pain, and the sound of the helicopter caused his brain to turn on pain. That can become habitual. A lot of people have pain, have migraine headaches, for example, wet with the change in the weather, or have headaches with the change in the weather, or with red wine, or with chocolate. A lot of people have back pain when they bend their back that may not be due to an injury in the back. A lot of people have neck pain when they turn their head. They may not be due to an injury in the neck. So these conditioned responses and kind of fear conditioning responses can cause pain to become persistent as one mechanism that is, I would say, in to some degree at least, a separate mechanism from the mechanism of that I was alluding to with the breast cancer surgery, fear, the woman who had a difficult marriage, people who have difficulty with their children, with their bosses, with their neighbors, all the emotional stuff that can trigger the danger signal to create pain. So those, I would say those are the two main mechanisms. There's a third mechanism that I would mention, and that is how we treat ourselves. I was talking to a person the other day, and they were saying, you know, I'm working so hard at making my pain go away. I'm doing everything possible. That's how I live my life. I do everything to the utmost. I work to the utmost. I study. I take care of my children to the utmost. I do everything full on. And I asked her, like, you know, I wonder where you learned that. Do you ever give yourself a break? You know, are you such a, you know, perfectionist, such a people pleaser, such a goodist, such somebody who just has to do everything 1,000%? Where did that come from? And it was a really interesting conversation. And that is a third mechanism. So one mechanism is the neural circuitry that can become stuck or can become habitual or can be reinforced through a variety of mechanisms. One main one, which is fear and conditioning. The other one is the stress and emotions in our lives. And of course, this can obviously be related to childhood trauma. I'm sure you're aware of that. And then the third mechanism is how we treat ourselves.
This is the power of the nervous system, right, Dr. Schubiner? This is the power of the nervous system is to create those habits to help us survive. And then this is when that adaptation is no longer serving us, but it's still an adaptation that we get to learn to work through and to change. And then Dr. Schubiner just mentioned how we treat ourselves. And this is what we refer to as the parts work, like how we speak to ourselves, how we treat ourselves, the stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves that I need to work hard in order to be deserving of anything. And this is why we have to include that aspect of how we treat ourselves in the work that we're doing here, or else the progress that we can make, I would say, would be blunted. Dr. Schubiner, is that how you would describe what you've seen, is that we won't be able to just get as far if we don't include that aspect of how we treat ourselves in the process?
Yes, absolutely. And one of the things you mentioned is how we know when a pain or a fatigue or a symptom is, you know, psychophysiologic, neural circuit, mind body, whatever you want to call it. And so we've developed these criteria that I call the FIT criteria, symptoms that are functional, inconsistent, and triggered, FIT. And we've written about these, and we're just in the process of publishing an article in which we use these criteria in a clinical sample of 220 people with chronic neck and back pain. And the physician that I work with, who was trained in this model, evaluated these 220 people, and he came up with a statistic that 88% of them had non-structural pain. 88%. That's a huge number. And if, you know, obviously, if most people would go to a typical doctor or physiatrist or surgeon or whoever with back or neck pain, I mean, their MRI is going to be abnormal because everyone's MRI is abnormal, of course, they would be diagnosed as having a structural injury to their back. But we came up with 88% were non-structural. And this is an amazing statistic and study that hopefully we'll be publishing soon. But the point is that you can rule out a structural problem by doing routine medical testing and evaluation. And you can rule in a neural circuit or a mind-body condition by applying these criteria. Does the symptom shift? Does it move? Does it turn on? Does it turn off? Did it start without any provocation? Is it inconsistent? Is it triggered by, is it in a wide area? Is it triggered by innocuous stimuli such as wind or sound or weather? Is it triggered by stress? Is it, and one of the fun things that I love to do, is it triggered by imagining a situation? Like a lot of people may have neck pain and it hurts when they turn their head. So when you turn your head, how do we know if the pain is due to a structural injury in the neck because your neck is damaged, or it's due to a conditioned response that your brain is turning on? How would we know? Well, one way we can find out is have people imagine turning their neck. Close your eyes, imagine turning the neck and see what happens. Oftentimes people will get discomfort when they imagine turning their head. Guess what? That's not due to a structural injury in the neck because they haven't turned their head. So there's a lot of methods that we use to help people unlearn, as Amy mentioned, unlearn their pain. And one of those is through what we would call graded exposure, of having people change their mindset and then imagine turning your neck with this mindset of calm and safe and ease and joy and peace and confidence and hope, all those things. And if you can imagine turning your head with that added, with that mental mindset, then you can start to turn your head with the same mental mindset. And then you will be teaching your brain that turning your head is not dangerous, it's safe. And as you know, neurons that fire together wire together. And so when someone keeps bending over or turning their head or going to work or whatever it is that's triggering this danger response in the brain, their brain is learning more and more pain, more and more anxiety, more and more fatigue, etc. But when you start linking these activities with a different mindset, now your brain is learning these activities are safe, and you're teaching your brain to change those neural circuits. and then you get better. And that's, and that is the essence of what we're calling pain reprocessing therapy.
And the graded exposure that you talked about, we use the word titrated experience around here. It's the same thing. It's this principle of we don't jump all the way in. Like the body needs a process. We need to pace the opening up. We need to pace this. And so that graded exposure is very much an important piece of the work that people do. And for those that you've worked with, Dr. Schumacher, how would someone make sure or do their best to not have chronic fatigue, for example, develop after their pain goes away, or one of these other psychophysiologic symptoms? If they're working with their pain, what do they need to do to not have it manifest in another symptom like chronic fatigue?
When I say the brain is a subconscious thing. We don't have a switch that we can tell your brain, do this, don't do that. We don't have that. That doesn't exist. Because as I described how the brain works, it's a subconscious mechanism. It's there to protect us, to help us, to guide us. It does what it wants. If it feels we're in danger, it's going to turn on some message. And it may be fatigue. It may be anxiety. It may be whatever, right? And there's no way to, make your brain do something. In fact, the harder you try to make your brain do something, it can often be counterproductive because you're creating more fear and frustration and things which drive the dangers in you. So my view is that our job is to treat our brain like a scared child. Treat our brain like a child who's lying in bed, fearful of a monster in the closet. And we have to open the closet door and say, look, there's no monster. We have to lie down with that child and comfort and soothe and love and care for and tell a story and play a game and tickle and laugh and do life-affirming activities. And that will calm the danger signal in the brain. But as during this process of calming the danger signal in the brain, symptoms will often come and go. Back pain may come up, may go away, and headaches may start. Stomach pain may go away and fatigue may happen, right? Hand pain may go away and anxiety may occur. That's all part of what the brain does. And our job is to know this and understand this and not try to prevent something, but try to understand that we're in a process of calming our danger signal. We're in a process of learning to take care and love ourselves. We're in a process of learning to deal with stressful situations in our life and sometimes stand up for what we need to do or say in our life and sometimes deal with trauma from our past. There's a variety of things that we're in the process of doing. But as this process unfolds, the symptoms may vary. And that's just part of what the brain does. And you can't stop it or control it. You have to understand it and work with it.
This is where we bring in the language around being that compassionate witness to the body, bringing in curiosity rather than the judgment and the fear that you're talking about. Getting curious about, I wonder why the fatigue might be surfacing right now. I wonder why this might be going and now this has appeared. And when we approach it with that fear of, oh no, what's going to happen now? I've never had this before, or is this back? Then it just retrains our brain to stay in that fear place, rather than being able to shift into the curiosity place and being able to see and treat our brain like a scared little child.
And it may not be a major, just because a new symptom starts or one changes, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's some deep emotional message going on. It may be just the brain is turning on one circuit, turning on another one, turning on this one, turning on that one as part of this process of, unraveling this. That kind of danger alarm mechanism. So, sometimes I have something I call the six F's, and the six F's are things which tend to reinforce this danger alarm mechanism and make symptoms more likely to be persistent. And they are fear of the symptom. Okay, I'll start with that. I guess that's why they're called the six F's. Fear of the symptom, worry about it. Second is focus on it, monitoring it, paying attention to it all the time. The third one is frustration with it and anger toward it. And I want to, you mentioned parts. I want to talk about IFS in a minute, if you want. The fourth one is fighting it, you know, like pushing, you know, because the more we fight it, the more power we're giving it over us. The fifth one is trying to figure it out. And that's where sometimes we can get in trouble saying, why did this happen? Why did I get this pain right now? You know, what's the psychological thing? You know, what's my brain telling me? What's the message? Like, okay, it's just a twinge, you know, like let's just watch it. It'll be okay. Right. And the sixth one is kind of funny. The sixth one is trying to fix it. And the message that we give to people is if it ain't broke, you don't have to fix it. And maybe we're not as broke as we think we are. Maybe we're not as damaged as we think we are. Maybe we're okay. And we can see that part of ourselves and treat ourselves that way. Anyway, so that's part of the model that I tend to use.
And who just got called out as being an overanalyzer of stuff? This is a lot of us here, right? This is why this work has been so helpful for us, is that we have tended to be a lot in our brains and trying to analyze and figure things out. And that's one of the first things that we change when we come to this work, right? That was one of the first things that we changed, as we're going to let those thoughts float down the river. We're not going to chase those thoughts of trying to understand it, why, and trying to fix it. It's just going to be, isn't this interesting? And just being able to allow it, be with it to the best degree possible, and see what the body wants to do next. So Dr. Schubiner, you mentioned that you wanted to speak on internal family systems.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that. I just happened to see a question about bone-on-bone pain, knee arthritis pain, hip pain, shoulder pain, those types of things. So what we know about that is that there's a great body of literature that shows, just like with MRIs of the backs, it's also true with knees, hips, and shoulders and other joints, that many people have degeneration or wear and tear on x-rays or MRIs without having pain. So just because someone has some abnormalities of the joint on x-ray or MRI doesn't mean that that's the cause of the pain. It may well be, and some people clearly have advanced and severe degeneration of certain joints that can cause pain. And, you know, some people certainly need a new hip or a new knee or whatever. That certainly can be true. But that's why we focus on this fit criteria, functional, inconsistent, and triggered, because you want to explore what are the characteristics of these symptoms of this pain? Does it shift and move from place to place? Does it come and go? Is it inconsistent? Sometimes I walk and it hurts. Sometimes I walk and it doesn't hurt. So what we want to do is look very carefully and in a detailed way to try to determine, to the best of our ability, is this primarily a neural circuit condition? Is it primarily a structural condition? Or is it, you know, some of each? So anyway, in terms of IFS, one of the simple things that I learned from Dick Schwartz, and Dick Schwartz and I and Ron Siegel wrote an article about IFS and pain, but one of the things that I'll frequently do when starting to do like a mindful awareness exercise or a somatic tracking exercise is, before doing that, I like to ask people, well, what is your feeling toward the sensation you have in your stomach, or your stomach discomfort or pain? I don't like to call it pain so much. Just I prefer sensations, but whatever. What's your feeling toward your neck? And the two main feelings that people tend to have are fear and anger. And so one of the simplest IFS techniques that Dick Schwartz taught me, if you choose, you can take this fear and put it in a room, or I like to say, put it on the table, or put it on the chair next to you for a moment, or take the resentment, the anger that you have toward it, set it aside for a moment, see how that feels, see what it's like to take that part of you or that feeling that you have toward it, and set it aside for a second, see what's left. Because then, as Amy pointed out, you can become more, maybe more curious or more compassionate toward the sensation you have. And when you take that attitude toward the sensation you have, you're taking a huge step in changing those neural circuits away from pain and discomfort toward calm and peace. So that's one small IFS-y kind of technique. We also use IFS, and I also use IFS as part of emotional awareness and expression therapy, because part of emotional awareness and expression therapy is what we would call memory reconsolidation. And memory reconsolidation is a way of helping people go back in time to a stressful, difficult life event in earlier in their life. Could be 2 weeks ago, or could be 20 years ago or 50 years ago, doesn't matter. And changing the memory of that event, as opposed to reliving the event, which is re-traumatizing and cruel, going back to change the event. And that's IFS does, it's part of IFS work, and it's also part of emotional awareness and expression therapy work.
We do that with some art narrative workshops. So I'm assuming it's very, very similar, very aligned with what you're doing, where I'm bringing in IFS and then through an art narrative process, going back to change the experience of the story, not reliving the story, but changing the actual experience of the body in that prior event and story, to then change the neural circuits still associated and connected with that past event.
There's a lot of different techniques that people have evolved over the years. Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Schubiner. Thank you for not only this time today, but for, again, all the work that you've done, the decades now of work that you've done to make this world a better place. And thank you for tuning into this episode of the Biology of Trauma podcast. Isn't it fascinating to know that 90% of chronic pain actually does not have a physical reason? I have resources for you in the show notes if you want to learn more or take action to find solutions related to this topic of chronic pain. Let me start with sharing the foundational journey. This is a 6-week process, and in the first 21 days, the participants experience a 26% decrease in daily physical pain. Some have gotten off of their pain medications in this time. And related to chronic pain, you will want to look at brain inflammation or neuroinflammation and know the solutions, the repair tools that you have available. So to further support how trauma creates changes in our biology, the brain inflammation is an important piece for both the chronic pain and the chronic freeze and trauma response. Nitric oxide might be another substance that you want to look into. It's an easy biology of trauma repair tool, and it will resource your cells and help create a biology of safety, which allows us to shift out of chronic pain. You will also find the nitric oxide test strips convenient, clinically effective, and super fast way of measuring your nitric oxide levels, which I do, which tells me when I should take nitric oxide. I have some other related podcast episodes to chronic pain. You'll want to look at episode 52, The Trauma Behind Chronic Pain, with Dr. Les Aria. Fantastic episode. Episode 57 was on how the body holds and hides pain with Dr. Vincent Folletti. And I have some related YouTube videos. There is Applying Internal Family Systems to a Chronic Illness with Dr. Dick Schwartz, if you are interested more in that topic of parts and how they're related to a chronic health condition. And then I have a masterclass where Gabor Mate and I sat down together and we shared lessons on the trauma disease connection, like the trauma pain connection. And you can catch that in the show notes. That link will take you to that masterclass. There is the trauma response behind fatigue symptoms. And this is also related to the chronic pain. And so I will have that link for that video as well. Finally, if you would take a minute to leave a review for the Biology of Trauma podcast, as you know, I am here to save you time and money by bringing you practical information that will help you accelerate the trauma healing journey. And so your reviews and feedback are very helpful to me. They are how I know how to improve this podcast, bring you great content, and help others find information that may just change their life. I'm your host for this podcast, Dr. Amy. And until next episode, lots of love.